So our next guest is Dean Sanjay Gupta from the Eli Broad College of Business. And so I have to start this by telling a slightly funny story. So the first time I met Sanjay was in my role as director of the Alumni Association a little over a decade ago, probably, now maybe close to 15 years ago. And President Simon and I were doing some sort of fundraising trips, and we were doing a trip through Arizona. And so so before the event, there was an event that night, and all the name tags are lined up on the table. And I see, and Sanjay hadn't started with us yet. He was in Arizona at the time and was coming to the reception. And so I see this name tag. It says Sanjay Gupta. And I thought to myself, oh, wow, I wonder why that guy from CNN is coming to our event tonight. And, well, it wasn't that guy, but that night, for the first time, I met Sanjay and learned that that he'd be joining us at the business school, and have enjoyed knowing you ever since. So, so we've just recently opened the Minskoff Pavilion, our newest part of the Broad College of Business complex. Tell us about what that means to the business school. What happens in that space, and how that helps you push the agenda of the college forward?
Well, Bill, first and foremost, Matt, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here and meet up with you guys in this format. This is always fabulous for us to be able to do. The Minskoff Pavilion, can't say enough about it. It has been... the first and foremost, just a glorious success, not only for the Broad College, but I would say for all of MSU. We conceived it as a space that was going to be devoted entirely to teaching and learning, to the student experience, to their success, and it is all of that and more. That has been the real phenomenal part about the Minskoff Pavilion. The students are in there as if that facility has always existed on our campus. They have seamlessly taken over all of the spaces that we built out, and it then feels so good because it proves that the design, the concept, the ideas that we had going in are really living themselves out in a perfectly nice way. The faculty are just absolutely thrilled to be in those spaces and have the chance to interact with the students, both formally in the classroom settings as well as informally, you know, in and about all of those different collaborative spaces. So it was entirely based upon saying, what is the kind of space that we don't have that we really need to be able to provide for this day and age for the students to be successful, right? And so that's what this Minskoff Pavilion has been all about. And then to cap it off with saying that this project was completed ahead of schedule, under budget, and fully funded by private support, you know, is the most visible symbol of success on our campus. And for
it's
it to have,
yeah,
you know, taken place right now, given all of the challenges that we've had in the recent past, really allows us to say with confidence that, you know, all of the good things that have been going on at Michigan State, they continue to, and people recognize that and support it, especially our alumni.
You know, Sanjay, as I was reading up on some things that you're doing, when you became dean 5 years ago, you went about, hey, we're going to do a strategic plan. Since Bill became athletic director, that's one of the things we're going through as an athletic department. Can you talk about some of the fruits of that, of the labor that you guys have been experiencing and kind of how that's helped shape your vision for the future?
Absolutely. That was one of the most important things, exercises that we went through, Matt. And what I would say there is it has truly helped us set priorities. It has organized our efforts, and it has allowed people to take ownership of different things. You know, I mean, I think absent some kind of a strategic planning effort, getting all of those things lined up is difficult. I'm sure you are experiencing that in athletics as well. So from that perspective, the strategic planning was an extremely important task that we took on. And by all accounts, it has been very helpful for us to be able to do all of those things, that is priorities, focus, and ownership. The process that we used was also very helpful in actually coming to what does the strategic plan look like. And that process, you know, I talked about the Minskov Pavilion earlier as centered around collaboration. The process that we used for our strategic plan was exactly that as well. A lot of collaboration internally. But the other thing that we did was get a lot of input from our external stakeholders so that the strategic plan was informed by what we were expected to then deliver at the end of that process. So we included in that process not only our alumni, but also our employers and all of the other kind of corporate relationships that we have to understand what it is that we need to be able to see at the end of the strategic planning process. You know, what is the outcome?
Well, and that strikes me as something that's really, really important. When we think about what a university is, we've got these 50,000 students that come here, and obviously here to get an education, whether it's a graduate degree or an undergraduate degree. But for those students, particularly undergraduates in the College of Business, that are coming here, you know, they're coming here with the end goal of then getting a job and having mm-hmm. a career. And so while it might be sort of intuitive, my guess is that a lot of places when they do their strategic plans may not be as thoughtful as you've been in thinking about, you know, what's the end game. You know, the end game for that student is a job. Mm-hmm. So how do we best position them with the skills, mm-hmm. tools that they need so that when that employer comes to campus, we've sort of created that perfect match.
Right.
So,
you know, I couldn't agree more. And that was the reason that we have four strategic themes within the plan. And these themes come from recognizing what it would take for our students to be successful, both in getting placed, but really eventually in their career paths as well. And so those strategic themes that we identified was, one was this whole digital transformation of business that is taking place. And that is, you know, it's not a fad. It's going to continue forever. The other one was around a global mindset. There is no business, there is no organization, doesn't matter even if it is based here in East Lansing, that doesn't have global implications, you know, in terms of all of the activity. The third one was around ethics and integrity. With everything that is going on, especially in the business world, they tell us it is ever so important for the people to really understand what does ethical conduct mean, and for people in leadership roles to really adhere to those principles. And the last one is around diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, we talk about that on the campus. It gets manifested in very different ways around the world, and really especially among business organizations. The one thing that we learned especially about diversity, equity, and inclusion was how important it is to go beyond the demographic aspects of it. You know, very often those conversations end up being just about the composition of the people in a classroom or on the faculty. And that is not enough. And we have really embraced that to say diversity and equity and inclusion goes so much beyond that. It's diversity of thought. It is diversity of backgrounds. It is diversity of the orientations that they might have. Nationalities, you know. I mean, there is so much different ways of thinking about diversity. And then being able to include them in everything that you do becomes really powerful. So we have enjoyed putting the flesh on the bones, to speak, around these strategic pillars and themes. as we worked with all of these external stakeholders and making it come alive inside the Broad College.
No, the one of the things I've always found really interesting about the business school is that, well, let me take a step back. Every year the Board of Trustees receives a diversity report, and Trustee Ferguson always tends to get frustrated, and because the report oftentimes talks about, as it has to, percentages of populations and those kinds of things, and he's always pushing and asking the question, how are people working together? How are people learning from one another? How are how are people engaging with one another? I think in the principle or the point of the question is that it doesn't matter what our percentages are. Obviously, that's important. But what's really important is, are people learning to work with one another, to respect and embrace differences in culture, differences in belief, differences in understanding? And it strikes me that the business school has always been on the leading edge of that kind of thinking. One example of that being your multicultural business program.
Yes.
And and talking about the four pillars, you know, they seem to very thoughtfully embrace that sort of forward thinking approach when you talk about, you know, the global community, the importance of diverse thought and perspective, technology, and ethics. It all just sort of feels to wrap around what's the cutting edge of business today.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for us, if we are going to be recognized as a top business school, it is absolutely critical that we are able to appeal to our external stakeholders on an ongoing basis. You know, just a simple thing like rankings, you know, just how many rankings are associated with business schools relative to all of the other disciplines that we might have on campus.
Right.
And we get exposed to that all the time. And all of these external stakeholders, you know, they're looking for a soundbite, and they look at these kinds of things. That is something that we take to heart, saying perceptions about us have got to really live up to the expectations that people have. And then bringing those together, that's the challenge that we face within the academy. What is it that we need to do to make sure that perceptions meets up with the realities that are being expected in the marketplace?
So one of the things people may not appreciate about a business school is that at a major research university, research happens everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people, when they think about research, they're drawn to a wet lab and beakers and chemicals and things like that. You know, if you sort of close your eyes and picture research, that's, I think, where most people's minds would go. But research happens everywhere, and it happens in the business school as well. So what are the what are the interesting things that your faculty are engaged in looking at? And tell us a little bit about research in the Broad School.
Oh, this is a great question because, yeah, you're right. There is a lot of skepticism as far as business schools go. That do you actually do research? And you know, the fact of the matter is all of our faculty are trained just like scientists in the sense that they have training in methodology. They have training in how do you go about with testing of hypotheses, developing those hypotheses, and then actually being an unbiased observer of the data and sharing what they find. So, you know, we contribute to knowledge just every bit the same way that people in ag and natural sciences do, or in arts and letters, or the other parts of the campus. The kinds of research that we are doing, though, is the touchstone of that is that rather than it being, say, in a pure science format, it really does have implications for how businesses and organizations are impacted, how decision-making takes place, and how we can influence that decision-making to be better. How is it that all of the participants in these organizations are better off as a result of some of the things that we might be able to contribute to that? I'll give you one example that comes out of one of the more least likely places that you might associate with research per se, and that is my School of Hospitality Business faculty, right? I mean, they are so hands-on applied to the hospitality industry and all that. You wouldn't expect that. One of our faculty members there is focusing on this concept called customer delight. The notion being that in hospitality anymore, simply, you know, providing service to the customers is not good enough. You really need to be able to surprise them and delight them in ways that are unexpected. And that has become the hot thing in that whole industry as to what does that mean. And she's focused on trying to understand what are the sources by which customer delight can take place, what are the implications. I mean, all sorts of things tied to this whole simple concept in some way, but really a powerful new way of thinking about how to treat guests and how to provide the services in this large industry, right? You know that we have had a legendary prowess in the area of supply chain management. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example over there where one of my faculty members in that area is actually working with Peckham Industries to think in terms of this whole notion around supply chains in the context of people with disabilities. And what does that mean? How do the normal concepts and ideas around efficient supply chains need to be modified, altered, suited for this kind of a population? So it brings social impact together with our expertise in one of the very important areas in business today, and that is around supply chains. Another faculty member in that area is looking at what are the risks associated when supply chains get disrupted for whatever reason, whether it's a natural disaster or it is this kind of a trade war that might be going on. And, you know, how does that impact, therefore, decision-making and your managing the risk associated with all of the things that you do? Not easy to do, right? My colleagues in accounting and information system, they are focused around another very interesting thing, which is this big data and data analytics that is going on. You know, one of the things that we are talking about increasingly is all of these kinds of theft of data and what happens in that. So there's one faculty member who's been looking at the theft of hospital data. And you'll relate to this a lot, Bill, from all of the work that you've done in the healthcare area. But, you know, what they are discovering is that the theft of that data is not really about your healthcare information. It is much more about your personal and financial information that is then deployed to either file a false tax return or this or that, get a credit card, a social security number. So this is fascinating.
Nobody cares about what your blood pressure is.
Nobody does, right? And so to bring that to the table to say, really, see, let's understand what actually happened as a result of this theft of healthcare data. It's just fascinating question. I could go on in all of the other areas. You know, our marketing guys are focused around sales leadership. Our management faculty they are recognized among the top three or five universities in the country in terms of scholarly output in the premier academic journals. They reside here at Michigan State, you know, in the Broad College. So I can't say enough about my colleagues in all of the years. I'm sure I missed out some of them, but there are lots of examples, and they are examples that are relevant in today's context, and they are examples that contribute to not just our overall understanding about society and business in general, but actually have practical implications for how things get done today.
You know, earlier you're talking about the four strategic themes, and one of those being the digital economy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I saw it was also phrased as the fourth industrial revolution. Yeah. So all of a sudden that kind of ups the ante on right. What are the challenges in preparing students to go into a workplace that is changing so much from the time they enter the school till the time that they leave. It's almost got to be hard to keep up almost.
Really hard to do. And, you know, so this is the excitement around this. And that is, what should we do in the academy that is going to have a shelf life beyond one semester or one day even at work, right? What is it that we can do that will allow the students to sort of build on that foundation in this truly dynamic environment that they are going to be entering into? And so we are focused on thinking about what are the kinds of skills you need when this environment is so dynamic and it is sort of constantly innovating, right? So we've talked to lots of organizations and our partners to understand what are the skill set. The World Economic Forum actually has done an extensive exercise around Industry 4.0 and therefore what are the skills that are going to be relevant, you know, going forward. And that's what we are focusing on. So it's things like creativity and innovation, the ability to solve unstructured problems, the ability to be able to synthesize and then communicate the effects of the task that you've done, the ability to actually be understanding of what will it take by way of teamwork and team effort to produce a viable solution. The understanding that you're going to learn just as much from your failures as you're going to learn from your successes, and the desire to persevere even in the face of, you know, not finding the right solution. I mean, these become the bedrock ideas. So the technology per se, the tool that we might teach, you know, that might change, and that's okay. So we'll use the mindset we are trying to adopt is that these tools are examples. What you need to be thinking and taking away from this is the kinds of skills that won't go away just because the tool has changed. So those kinds of ideas are what we are focusing on. How do we make them alive? How do we provide our students multiple opportunities to practice this? That's the other thing, right? So it is not simply a matter of letting them know that you need to be creative. No. We really have to put them through the paces of what does that creativity mean? How do you actually try to think creatively? It's not just something that gets injected on you, but it's like the notion of practice. So we are really focusing on that a lot and putting that in different contexts so that people can understand what does redefining a customer mean. The whole field of marketing is changing, and man, you probably can relate to this well, in that what used to be marketing before is no longer what we expect to do. You know, just being able to connect with the customer is also not sufficient. You really want to build a relationship with the customer to turn that into a lifelong relationship. What does that mean? How do you go about understanding and doing that? So those are the ideas that we are really focusing on. By the way, this Industry 4.0, you know, this is a sea change in what's taking place in the business world, really in economies around the world. I just returned from Indonesia along with our ag and natural resource colleagues, and we were there for a week. And what was amazing is the institutions over there that we met, what was on their minds. You know, we met the president of three different universities, presidents of three different universities. The first words that came out of their mouth were Industry 4.0.
What are the things that excite you about the future and what's on the horizon?
The overall overarching desire is still to continue towards being a top-of-mind business school. And focusing our efforts, this is not an easy thing to be able to do, where you might imagine, you know, you go to Chicago and you're talking to families that are trying to make a decision about where their daughter or son goes to school and, you know, what comes to their mind. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, is how do we continue to push the name recognition, the brand recognition of the Broad College in Michigan State, such that it is top of mind. So that continues to be our overall goal, and I hope that regardless of whether I'm in the dean role or not, you know, that's something that people can adopt and persevere towards, because that's hopefully an uncontroversial issue in some sense. On a more tactical level, you know, in this last few years, I've devoted so much of my time domestically cultivating all of the different constituencies here at home, both within MSU, but also all of our external stakeholders around the country. Something that I did not do enough of is think about our international footprint. And so, you know, going forward, that's certainly something that is on our plate to evaluate and build out some stronger international partnerships and an international footprint, which also, you know, dovetails with that first goal that I mentioned, and that is this top-of-mind business school. I mean, I think that stature domestically gets enhanced from our international stature and presence as well.
Whenever I travel, I always sort of do a little experiment, and I always make sure that I'm wearing something, a ball cap, a jacket, something with the MSU logo on it. And I particularly enjoy doing this with my kids because it creates an example. But I always sort of test how long I go through the day if I'm a tourist in a foreign city or wherever it might be before somebody gives me a go green.
Yeah, yeah.
And whether it's in London this past summer with one of my sons or in other places around the United States where business travels might take me, it's amazing how quickly, sure, you know, before the day is through, you've got several shout-outs.
Yeah.
And to me, that speaks to not only the sort of the global nature of our university, the 550,000 living alums we've got that really touch every corner of the globe, but also it speaks to the quality and the stature of MSU. One last question. When I talk about MSU athletics, I try and talk about making sure that we're successful on the field of play, successful in the classroom, and then that sets our students up to be successful in life. And in a sort of way, it seems like the business school has a similar agenda, and it's something that I think has transformed over the years. And so this maybe is a bit of a stretch of an analogy, but we've always taught people in a sort of a book smart kind of a way. We teach people accounting or we teach people marketing, but it seems as though more recently, there's been an added emphasis not only on teaching but on doing, on creating experiential learning. Yeah. So, you know, when I talk about on the field of play and in the classroom, I translate that field of play piece to the field of play of business in experiential learning, whether it's internships or other opportunities that we create for people to actually take that knowledge and do.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that makes our students very valuable in the marketplace, because you can go into a job maybe not with actual job experience that would be nice, but in practical experience that you might gain as a student that gives them a leg up and maybe the ability to dive in more quickly into that first job.
Absolutely. We are doing a lot to enrich their experience while they are here on campus beyond what, you know, they'll do in those individual courses and so on. I'll give you three or four examples of the kinds of things they're doing very quickly. We put in place a extensive executive speaker series, and these are all C-suite folks who are mostly our alumni to come back to campus and really share their experience. It is more about, it's not about a particular topic that we wanted them to talk about, but really much more about their life journey and what it has taken them to be as successful as they have been. What were some of the failures that they experienced? So this is now embedded within everything that we are doing in the Broward College, and now we bring on campus almost one every week.
Oh, wow.
For the whole year. The other one that we have done is try and incorporate a few people at least in a deeper way within the Broward College is started a executives in residence program. And these are individuals that we have gotten to know that they are having a transition in their lives. Many of them are just retiring from their, full-time gigs and saying, I've got a little bit of time on my hands and I'd like to be able to contribute in some way. What do you have going? So in any given semester, actually over an academic year, we'll have anywhere from 3 to 5 executives in residence. And these people are spending a lot more time on our campus. Now, it's very flexible, but, they are there for a longer duration. So it allows lots of different constituencies to get to know them and for them to be able to touch all of those different parts. We created this forum, a platform called Broward Connect. This is absolutely cool, and I know we are now getting MSU to adopt something like this. And that is a platform whereby alumni can connect with our current students. And we have required, as part of one of the courses in communications, a project that every student must do is called the Wisdom Project. And in this Wisdom Project, every student is paired up with an alum that then they go through and have a series of experiences with them around communication skills. So it's almost as if, they are talking to a prospective employer, a mentor, or so on, and there are structured exercises like that. We have some 600-700 of our alumni that are participating in this exercise every semester.
Wow, that's
and it's become
amazing.
Just a phenomenal thing. Yeah. But these are just a few examples, Bill, where this experiential learning is being incorporated in what we are doing in the Broward College, together with all the curricular experiences, in a really nice and a rich way.
So we've been joined today by Dean Sanjay Gupta of the Eli Broad College of Business. So Dean Gupta, before we completely let you escape as the athletic director, I'll ask you: is there a favorite sport that you like to participate in, or watch?
So I must tell you, I love to watch football. But as you probably also know, the Broward College has a suite in the stadium, and we invite a lot of our alumni and guests. I don't get to watch the game. I spend my entire game day really interacting with the alumni. But I love football, and I also love basketball. So basketball, I watch really at home, and so that works out well. I don't come out of the games because the football season is long enough and do enough of the campus activity for that. But thank you for those opportunities. And, by the way, I did go to the Champions Classic in New York.
Great.
And we were
yes.
there for that game. And it came up just a little short, but it was a phenomenal outing for us. So it
always
was good
fun
to be included.
Always fun to be at Madison Square Garden. Always a great experience. Well, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it and wish you well going forward in the Eli Broad College of Business. Dean Sanjay Gupta.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.